And now it's gone so pear-shaped that the team that I thought I was leading has gone out and gotten another me. Because all of a sudden, I'm not the me they thought they were getting. Now, whose fault is that ultimately? You know, I mean, I know it's playing with a bunch of different levels of reality, most of which aren't. But I mean, I think we all agree that, you know, if James Harden was going to go anywhere and things in Brooklyn were normal, James Harden would be in Philadelphia. And so something is clearly off in Brooklyn. Otherwise, they don't do this, and they don't spend as much capital as they do to make this happen if things are okay there.
Yeah, I think that's right. The nit I might pick is just, you know, and I know you're not excusing it, Ray, but I don't even think that explanation works for Kyrie, because it's not like Kyrie came to the Nets to have his own program and then all of a sudden Kevin Durant walked in the door and there was nothing he could do about it. I mean, this was the plan. Kyrie and Kevin Durant joined the Nets together, essentially. So, you know, maybe, yeah, I guess he could have gone into that thinking he was the alpha, but A, he should not have. That would have been silly and incorrect. And B, like, Kevin Durant is a pretty upfront dude in all of our experience. And I can't believe, I mean, he should have known from the Steve Nash thing for sure. Like, I honestly don't know what Kyrie even thinks he's looking for.
I think you got a case of two guys who are always imagining the grass being greener on the other side. I mean, Durant removed himself from a not good enough situation, placed himself in what seems to be and has been reported as basketball nirvana, with a winning percentage that kind of matched that concept with the Golden State Warriors, with generous, egoless teammates, coaches, front office members, a brand new building, San Francisco, California, a right this way, sir, to meet all the powers and movers and shakers in the entire tech world. And that sounded like what he was looking for, and he loved the Bay Area, and he loved the restaurants and the shops and everything, and then he didn't. But he's the guy who's constantly, there are some people in life who can't realize that they're dancing with the right partner, and they consistently are looking over their partner's shoulder. And I'm not saying that these are bad people, but it's just how some people are wired. Some people are very much wired to, when they meet the right partner, they can't take their eyes off that partner. But I think that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are always looking at what is going to make them happier, or what is going to present the next challenge. And the next challenge is going to make them happier than the comfort zone of finally reaching what looks to be a destination. I mean, I don't know. I'm getting all goobledy gobbledy gooky here. I understand that. But it's
well, except the difference between Durant and Kyrie is massive. Because
Not in Kyrie's mind. I don't believe that. I know you're right.
That's not what I'm not even talking about their ability on the court. And again, if Kyrie thinks he's close to Kevin Durant, then he's delusional, which is fine. There's plenty of delusional guys in the league, but that's not what I mean. I mean, the decisions you're talking about, Kevin Durant left a situation that wasn't good enough for a better situation. That's not a grass is greener thing. Then when he felt like he had got what he needed out of the great situation, he wanted a different situation. And I don't think Kevin Durant right now is like, oh, God, I wish I had stayed with the Warriors. I think Kevin Durant right now is like, what is Kyrie's problem? I guess I better look for some other options. And luckily for him, or non-luckily, depending on how you look at it, there was another option sitting on the trade market since before the season began, and they pulled the trigger. So, I don't know that this is going to turn out great. But based on everything he said and everything I've seen, I think what Kevin Durant wanted was the kind of power he's enjoying right now. And I think he believes with that power and his ability, he'll eventually get to the top.
Look, he's clearly been pretty successful betting on himself his entire life. Why would you stop now? I get it. The only reason why any of this nonsense is allowed out of anybody is if you have a galactic amount of talent. And I'll tell you, that is the saving grace for Kyrie Irving. As nuts as he seems, as inhospitable a partnership with him seems to be. When he is out on the court, he is a spectacular expression of effective basketball. I mean, he really, really is. And he's been awesome. When he's been out there, he has balled this year. He has been even better than Kevin Durant. And I think in his own mind, he's thinking, well, this guy's coming off an Achilles. I've never been hurt like that. I was the number one pick. He wasn't. I was. I am the man. I really think he thinks that. And he plays like that. He plays like the man. In many ways, in basketball, he is the man. There's nobody in the world who could get away with 6 days of unexcused employer absence. You couldn't get away. I mean, Reggie Jackson couldn't do that in his heyday. Michael Jordan couldn't have done that. The woman who is the Walmart greeter today couldn't get away with that. No one can get away with that. But Kyrie Irving has gotten away with it. It's nuts. It's crazy. We'll be back for all of this in a little moment. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, a man who knows Houston like the back of his hand. It's where he lives. It's where he works. He is part of the Rockets broadcast. We're going to have Matt Thomas join us in about 15 minutes to explain what are we calling it? Like life after Harden looks like in Houston. That's all coming up today. Your calls and thoughts on the trade. It is a huge one. Steve Kerr a little bit later on if you missed him. Stick around. We're also going to have Howard Beck on a What If Wednesday. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Air Raid. Sounds like a drill. Welcome on back, Damon Ratto and Kolsky. It's wonderful to have you. James Harden traded from the Houston Rockets to the Brooklyn Nets. Maybe the most fascinating thing about this seven-player, several first-round draft picks, pick swaps, four-team trade is that Kyrie Irving wasn't even a part of it. At the top, the Brooklyn Nets have three of the most talented NBA players in the world, in James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant. They also have three guys who need the ball and have usage rates that are just through the roof. Again, only seven active players in the NBA have career usage rates above 29%, and three of them are now teammates. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden are all ball dominant. So that is going to be a very, very interesting team to follow. What happens next to the rebirth of the Rockets is going to be a fascinating follow. The Pacers walk away with maybe the brightest young player in this trade in Caris LeVert. Fascinating afternoon for NBA fans of trades. And just if you love the league, this is one of those reasons why. Welcome on back. We do have a friend of ours from Houston joining us in a little bit here, Ray and Matt. Matt Thomas, who is part of the Rockets Radio Network. He's a talk show host in Houston as well. He is going to come on by to talk about the afternoon that they're having. It's just a fascinating day. It really, really is. We invited people in at 888-957-9570. Guys, I know we were crunching everyone off as we were going to break there, too. So I can't remember. Matt or Ray, someone was about to make a point on either Kyrie or the Nets or something, and we hit the break. Let's get back to that right here before we get to the calls.
I believe it was Matt who was about to make the point.
Oh, no, my memory doesn't last through a commercial break. I think... Maybe
I love that.
We're going to talk about
that's a T-shirt. It's a T-shirt.
It's a T-shirt for a very small audience. I think the Oladipo part of this is interesting because one of the curious things about the Rockets, and maybe this is the goal, and maybe what Tillman Fertitta has realized is that the best way to actually probably make money as an NBA team is to just be good consistently and not try to necessarily win, but, you know, make the playoffs and lose in six games and call it a day, because that's sort of what this team looks like. I mean, in this Western Conference, they probably don't make the playoffs, but one thing they did in acquiring John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins is sort of commit to doing something today. At least, like, winning sometimes. And I think Oladipo serves that purpose better than LeVert. But that is a weird part of it. And to your point, Indiana, I mean, do we need to talk about how good they can be? If TJ Warren comes back and you've got Brogdon and LeVert and Sabonis, Warren, Turner. I mean, that starting five is pretty nasty. And they
McDermott off the bench, not bad. You
McDermott,
know?
Not bad. But who was the kid in the starting lineup last night, Lucas? Sam? Why am I blanking on his name now? The shooting guard they started last night.
Oh, Sampson.
I think he might have been. Jakar Sampson comes off the bench. Sumner. Edmund Sumner is the guy they started. So now you have Sumner, Sampson, as you mentioned, McDermott, Justin Holiday, Aaron Holiday, all coming off the bench. Well, both Holidays would be coming off the bench.
Yeah.
If you've got Warren healthy and LeVert in the starting lineup. This is an incredibly deep team in the Eastern Conference now, and they're already playing pretty well.
And they've always been a traditional good regular season team. And this might advance that, except for one thing. If Brooklyn actually figures it out, then Indiana is still a good regular season team that's only going to get to the second round before they get hammered out.
Yeah, but you know what, Ray?
But it's still a good deal for them because they weren't going to be anything more than what they are right now by standing pat. And in moving Oladipo, they also moved a guy who I think was sort of indifferent to playing there. I mean, he sort of wanted to be traded, and then he kind of tried to passive-aggressive his way out of it.
Yeah, but it did not work in Indiana, man. That does not fly back there. And he had nothing but an adoring crowd that he basically chased away from himself.
Well, and yeah, whatever he wanted.
So ultimately,
his availability was, on and off at best. And what you've done is get a younger guy who's probably similar on offense, if not better at this point, and, not as good on defense, but you got a lot of defenders on your team, and you hope you can convince him to do a little more on that end. And maybe most importantly, has some experience being a lead scorer for a team, because he essentially did that most of the year last year when Kyrie Irving was not playing. I think you may be right, Damon. The Pacers may have done better today than anyone.
It's nuts. It really is. And they just got enough blue-collar mentality. Because here's the thing. So here's the Brooklyn Nets plan. We will have the three best players on the court. Rest of the team be damned. Well, the only real way you got a shot against a team that does indeed have the three best players on the court is you got players 4 through 12 better. And that's how you go about beating the Brooklyn Nets. They're always going to be best 1 through 3. Are you best 4 through 12? And I think the Pacers are a better 4 through 12 team looking at them today than the Nets might be a 1 through 3. I mean, it's crazy. It really is. We got callers and we got a guest at the bottom of the hour. So let's squeeze in everyone right here and now. This is Gio in San Francisco talking about the NBA trade heard around the world. Hello, Gio.
Hello, hello, hello. Crazy stuff this morning and such. I was just going to ask about, in regards of like that whole, Houston Nets stuff. Kyrie is lost. This is quick math, so bear with me. But 53 games, Kyrie is like either skipped or missed, and he considers himself a leader. That's kind of tough when you think about it, because tardiness is never positive. But that said, the funny thing that I keep thinking about, and I was hoping to see, is like you guys are talking about T-shirts. A good shirt for the Nets right now would be something like what, like the drama team or Keeping Up with the Nets. I don't know. What do you guys think? It's kind of funny all in all.
They are setting themselves up to be psychoanalyzed six ways from Sunday by people who don't have degrees in psychology but are just basketball fans. And that is the kind of poking and poking and poking and poking that has driven Kevin Durant crazy, I think, in the past, that has definitely gotten to Kyrie. And now James Harden, welcome to your own lunacy. I mean, you can say what you want about the popularity of the Rockets in Houston. Basketball in New York is a really big deal. People will be paying attention. Again, he's not a New York Knicks, so not the most attention, but they're going to be paying attention for sure. And like I always said, the thing about Pablo Sandoval being a pudgy yet productive outfielder or infielder for the San Francisco Giants was he was the roly-poly lovable Sandoval. He gets to Boston, and he turns into a fat chowder belly overnight. Like, that's the greeting that is waiting for James Harden. If he really does show up out of shape, you know, a guy who partied himself through a pandemic more than he worked on an NBA body, that's for sure. He looked like a guy who was giving a YMCA-level effort in his last handful of games in Houston. We love having Ryan Russillo on. Ryan Russillo tweeted last night, if you haven't watched the Rockets, I'd urge you to make sure that you don't miss this out. They're the most miserable team I've seen in years. You got a checked-out Harden, peak Boogie Cousins, wood threes all over the court, role players getting mad at all starters. Catch it before it's over. Well, I hope you caught it, because it was over after that game. And if you don't believe that James Harden is like a hang dog, I'll take my ball and go home kind of a player, this is a damning stat. He hasn't scored more than 20 points in four straight games, his longest stretch since 2012. The guy who is demanding a trade but won't play hard, that's a major red flag with me. Say what you want about Jimmy Butler, but when he wanted a trade, he would go in there and outwork the entire team in practice and just start embarrassing guys. Say what you want about Anthony Davis, who staged the single most brazen trade demand I think we've seen a modern NBA player hold over a team. And he might have been unprofessional, and he might not address the part coming in and out of the arena, and he might have been uncooperative. But when the game started, he played his rear end off. Anthony Davis played hard while he was demanding a trade. I don't even know what James Harden is anymore. I don't know how serious I'm ready to take him until he shows that he's a serious NBA player once again. And I think that Kyrie is in that boat because, again, he's AWOL. He's absent without leave.
Well, and who on this team is going to play defense?
Caris LeVert. Oh, wait a minute.
LeVert's not a great defender. Allen was the best defender. Allen's their best, and he's gone. DeAndre Jordan hadn't played defense in 5 or 6 years. I mean, Kevin Durant is coming off an Achilles injury, which, you know, lateral movement on defense is the biggest worry for everybody. Kyrie doesn't like to do it. Harden doesn't like to do it. Joe Harris, God bless him, not a great defender.
At least they have a coach who preaches the importance in defense in Mike D'Antoni. Oh, wait a minute.
Or a head coach in Steve Nash, who is noted for his defensive acumen.
Oh, like first team all NBA defense.
It's really that's going to be an issue. We just talked to Steve Kerr about how the whole key to his team is defense, and he felt that way when Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson were here too. So that's the issue for me. If you've watched the Nets so far, their problem has not been scoring, and James Harden is an answer to a scoring problem, not a defensive problem.
Here's the thing. There really isn't a single team in the NBA that has a hard time scoring. Everybody can score. Everybody's got shooters. Everybody's got slashers. Everybody's got scorers. Everyone can finish at the rim. Their talent in this league is ridiculous. A defensive effort truly is an outlier, and it's what's carrying the Warriors through their early season struggles, and it's still the root of good teams playing poorly all the time. What was wrong with them? Well, the defense was what was wrong with them. We do have Matt Thomas coming up in just a little bit. Chris West Oakland, you're on 95.7 The Game. Hello, Chris. Chris going once.
There we go. Hey,
there he is.
Hey, there you go. Hey, you know, you said the key thing about defense. I heard a great line today. Harden and Kyrie basically look at defense as a minor inconvenience until their next shot attempt. But I'll say this, and this is part of the disillusion with a lot of fans with the NBA. This is just another example of bad behavior being rewarded with exactly what these guys want. Say what you want about LeBron and even KD. They always play 100% when they play. They never dog it. They never come in out of shape. They play out their contract, and then they leave. I hope Steve Nash has a psychology degree, because he's going to need one. Because, again, so many teams keep trying to recreate the Golden State Warriors, but it's their professionalism. It starts at the top on down. And Kevin Durant, congratulations. You left the two most egoless superstars in the NBA to now play with this head case. And I'm going to go back to what Magic Johnson said a year ago when KD said playing with the Warriors wasn't what he expected. If you're not happy playing with the Golden State Warriors, winning titles, and playing with somebody like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, I don't believe you can find true happiness. And Ray or Damon, one of you guys said it earlier about dancing with the right partner. 5 or 10 years from now, Kevin Durant's going to look back and say, what the hell was I thinking? But guess what? The fuse has been lit. We all get to watch this. It's going to be fun because my prediction is that within 2 years, this franchise completely implodes and two of the three guys will both be gone. Thanks, guys, for letting me rant. Have a great day.
Get that man his own podcast. That was a fantastic call. Thank you very much. Look, an awful lot of what you said, I think, resonates with an awful lot of people listening, because the Warriors really did offer up the path of least resistance just on their own roster. You know, all we're going to ask is everyone get along, and Steph Curry is going to defer as a unanimous MVP to make sure everybody's involved. Who is going to defer for Kevin Durant? I mean, first time, one possession game, 3 seconds left on the clock. Who's inbounding the ball? That'll be the guy who doesn't shoot it. Who catches the ball? That'll probably be the guy who does shoot it, unless it's Durant. I think Durant would look to make the right play. We know that Kyrie's shooting the ball. We know that Harden is going to shoot that ball. And how will Kevin Durant exist in that orbit? It's going to be fascinating. It really is. We've got Matt Thomas. We've got Matt Thomas, gentlemen. We our guest is ready to go. And I want to bring Matt in with a little bit of sound, because we had Steve Kerr on earlier today, and he was talking about how, you know, where did his thoughts go when he heard that the Houston James Harden era had ended? And he thought back to a moment that I think is certainly a defining moment for the Warriors in the rivalry between the two. Here is Steve Kerr.
You know, that game six in Houston a couple years ago, when we closed them out after Kevin had gotten hurt in game five, will always go down as one of my favorite games, you know, as Warriors coach, just because of what it took to win on the road without Kevin, and the way the guys played, the way they shared the ball and defended. It was a beautiful night. And that was one, like I said, one of the best nights we've ever had.
There you go. I thought that was a really good soundbite to bring on our guest this hour, Matt Thomas, who is part of the Rockets Road Radio. He does play-by-play. He does home PA announcements. He is a talk show host in Houston. And with all the Houston rivalry that the Bay Area has enjoyed, he's our one friend. We have made a friend in Houston. That friend is Matt Thomas, and he's good enough to join us here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Matt, thanks very much. What do you think of the world you are living in this afternoon, a world without James Harden?
Why do you people call me?
Well, you know, normally it's to talk about cheating World Series teams, but now we'll just make it about a basketball team.
What do you want now? You want the Niners to trade for Deshaun Watson?
That'd be great.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Possibly want from me? All you do is call when there's controversy or suspensions or firings or unhappy athletes. You never call and say, "Hey, Matt, I hear the weather is 68 degrees today in Houston, Texas." Or, "Hey, I heard that you know, gas prices are going down." Or, "Hey, I heard you guys are one of the most international food cities in America." No, you never call that. You only call when blank is hitting the fan. Hi, guys.
Well, it hits the fan in Houston, I think, more than any other sports town these days. And I guess we do have a question or two about Deshaun, but all that gets backburnered because, really, you are around the Houston Rockets right all the time. When did you feel the seeds of discontent really being sown? We know that Harden is out of shape and basically mentally checked out. When did you see the writing on the wall?
Unfortunately, I saw the writing on the wall when he wasn't with the guys at training camp, when there were photos of him being at Lil Baby's party in, whether it was Atlanta, Vegas, or both. There's a variety of things he was doing that was not basketball-related. And frankly, what was going through his mind is something that I kind of figured out a long time ago when this whole thing started, that makes a lot of sense now, is that he has been the constant here in Houston for almost a decade, give or take. And he has seen transformations in Golden State. He has seen transformations in Miami. He has seen transformations in Los Angeles with the Lakers, the Clippers. And guys, I think in the back of his mind, he was thinking, why can't I do that? Why can't I pick where I want to go? Why can't I go play with who I want to play? The only difference in the situation here in Houston is that he did get to do that. The only difference was he brought the players here as compared to him being shipped out somewhere else.
That said, that you could see people on the horizon, it does seem like this thing got incredibly accelerated overnight after what he said last night about
right.
You can't fix what's here. Was that, in fact, the last straw? Could this have lingered a couple more weeks if he hadn't said that? Or was the process already too far along?
I think the process has been, first of all, it had never, ever slowed down. It had never, ever, well, James is now buying in. There was, guys, to be honest with you, it was just kind of on the back burner. It was the Rockets have spread the word around the NBA that they were not going to just take 40 cents on the dollar. And I think that the last couple of days, things have picked up. I think Kyrie's, whatever he's doing there in Brooklyn, has probably got Durant concerned about who his Robin's going to be to his Batman. And I think things pick up the last couple of days. And that's why I think what he said last night after the butt kicking that the Lakers put on the Rockets, it was not just off the cuff. It was, I think I've got an opportunity here. I think I'm hearing I'm going to be moved in the next 24 to 48 hours. This will be the last time in front of Houston media before a game. Here's my fond farewell. And that's how I took it this morning when all the national pundits were out there saying that things have picked up. I just don't think for a guy who doesn't like doing media would have gone in front of that camera on that Zoom and said all those things if he didn't know something was going on and something was on the precipice of happening.
When you hear James Harden say things like, God, I just tried everything here and it can't be fixed. As someone who's watched him be in control of the now unfixable mess, does that chap your ass a little bit? I mean, I think it would drive me crazy.
I wouldn't say it gets me mad. I think it's a little delusional. And guys, you've been around athletes a lot. And I love the NBA. I mean, I am so blessed to be doing what I'm doing with my talk show and being a part of the Rockets broadcast. But the NBA, in the history of sports, especially in the last 15 to 20 years, is more diva-filled than ever. And they don't surround themselves with people, whether it be their friends, maybe selected media, whomever, that ever tell them that they're to blame or they're wrong. And I think, frankly, you know, James wakes up and is able to step on a floor and score 35 points, dish out 8 or 9 assists, grab 5 or 6 rebounds. That's what he's done for every bit of his Houston Rocket career. And he's, you know, his philosophy's got to be, I've done everything and then some. And you guys have, you know, and no matter what we've brought here, I've been the one constant. Dwight Howard as a Houston Rocket didn't work out particularly well. Chris Paul clearly did, except for the fact that he hurt his hamstring in Game 5 against the Warriors, which you just talked about. Russell Westbrook, just never could mesh with him. And I think when you were bringing all these people to Houston, the thought was, well, they have to adapt to me because I'm the alpha dog, I'm the Batman. And I think that when you have enough people around your world, whether it be mom, whether it be agents, whether it be best friends you hung out with when you were kids and they're hanging out with you now, he just hasn't been ever told, I think, hey, it's time for you to change your game a little bit. And I think that will be probably the biggest culture shift for James as he goes to Brooklyn, is that will there be somebody, whether it be Steve Nash, his former head coach Mike D'Antoni, or his good buddy Kevin Durant, that's going to say, you know what, maybe for the first time since you were a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder as a sixth man, you've got to change who you are. And so that's why that'll be, to me, the most interesting part of all this, is that will James be able to adapt for something that he never has to worry about here, because everything that he'd asked for, the Rockets as an organization gave him.
Matt Thomas, in good times, but mostly in bad, our friend from Houston. He's part of Rockets Radio broadcast and good enough to join us here today. What was his relationship? Was it good or bad with Mike D'Antoni? And who from the Brooklyn Nets walked into D'Antoni's office to say, guess what we just did? And what do you think D'Antoni's reaction was?
Well, I'm one of the biggest Mike D'Antoni fans you'll find out there. So he's very even-keeled, doesn't want to ruffle feathers. He would be the first person to tell you that his days as a coach in Phoenix, New York, and in Los Angeles were a lot different than the Houston Rockets head coach he was for the previous 4 years. He understood that if he ever got sideways with James, that James would win that battle. And so I would assume that he knows only the best parts of him, but he also knows all of him. And so, you know, again, granted, guys, when you're the associate head coach or whatever he's titled in Brooklyn, it's a different animal than it would be to be the head coach. So my guess is at 69 years old, knowing that Kyrie Irving might be a ticking time bomb up there with Brooklyn at this point, that Kevin Durant needs somebody to compete to, you know, outlast Milwaukee and or Philadelphia for Eastern Conference supremacy. So my guess is when you have a chance to get one of the 5 best scorers in the NBA, even if it comes with perceived baggage, you take those chances. So they had a terrific relationship. But also Mike's certainly aware of the style, coaching strategy, way that you motivate a James Harden. And a lot of that is just kind of leave him alone and let him be.
So today's the day we learn what it takes to trade for James Harden. What do you think the ask would be for Deshaun Watson if he really is to be traded? What would Houston demand be the, you know, the opening salvo in any negotiation? 3, 4 first-round picks?
Well, again, and this is one of the things that I've had to try to tell my audience, because some people will call other shows on my station and say, well, let's trade him for this. As poorly run as the Houston Texans have been for the better part of a couple of years especially, they're not wanting to trade Deshaun Watson. They would like to have Deshaun Watson happy and satisfied. Whether that happens or not remains to be seen. Now, granted, again, we're not talking about the start of the football season until September. If indeed Deshaun walked into the Texans' offices and said, I want to be traded, I would think at bare minimum you'd have to have at least 3 first-round picks, a combination of second and thirds, and maybe even a quarterback in return. That's why I think the – I don't know if it was Pro Football Talk or somebody had a report earlier this week that the Miami Dolphins would show some interest, because in return you would get Tua Tagovailoa here in Houston. So, again, I want to be very clear. There is nothing coming from the Texans that would entertain an offer unless Deshaun walked in and said, I want out of here. Now, what has further complicated things is the second greatest player in Houston Texans history, Andre Johnson, eviscerated the executive vice president of football operations in a tweet. And further doubled back on it on an Instagram with he and Deshaun with the Rockets game last night. And so if Andre gets Deshaun's ear and Deshaun doesn't get satisfactory comments from Cal McNair, the owner, and the new general manager, Nick Caserio, this could get a lot uglier. But, again, we're talking about January here. There's time to cool things off a little bit. And the number one thing is Deshaun knew what was going on, because he's also the one that, you know, signed a contract in the middle of the year that extends him for several more seasons at over $40 million a year. So he can't be completely blind to what the culture was like inside the Houston Texans organization.
Well, if you hear from us anytime soon, you'll know that the Niners opened up the negotiations, and we'll have you back on when that happens. But in the meantime, thank you very much. Always appreciate your time, Matt. Enjoy life after Harden.
Well, I mean, Victor Oladipo's okay, right?
I mean, well, look, I'm an Indiana guy, so yeah, go Hoosiers. Enjoy Victor Oladipo.
Yeah, it's the Oladipo Gordon IU connection. All you need now is, we're done. Thanks, boys.
Thank you so much. Matt Thomas here on 95.7 The Game. Great stuff on the way out the door. We're coming on back. More of you, more of Ray, more of Matt. 888-957-9570. We got much more coming up. One of the biggest trades in modern NBA history happens today. The Warriors lose last night. They're off to Denver for an interesting matchup with the Nuggets tomorrow. We've got an awful lot still coming up, including a conversation with Howard Beck, who, of course, covers the NBA based out of Brooklyn. So we will get the Brooklyn Nets side of the story, since we just heard from our source in Houston. Damon Ratto and Kolsky brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. Our Exergen temperature check tells us it's sunny and 68 degrees up in Napa.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Like, which one of you likes Anita Baker? What, I don't understand. What's going on?
Clearly you don't know Mike Jones. This is still tipping, and he's a legendary Houston rapper. So we're going all Houston the rest of the day.
Oh, thank you very much. Mike Jones. That's the guy whose lyrics are, Mike Jones.
Who?
Mike. Also his phone number.
Mike Jones. It's amazing. Imagine if we did 4 hours of Damon Ratto and Kolsky, and all we did was say each other's names. 4 hours a day. Ray Ratto. Matt Kolsky. Damon Bruce. Mike Jones.
We'd also have to give out our personal phone numbers, 281-330-8004.
Oh, I'll give out a number right now. 888-957-9570. That's as personal as we getting, baby.
Hit up 95.7 out on the floor.
There was some boot knocking music right there. Mike Jones, thank you very much. Consummating trades, boot knocking music, I get it all. Houston, it makes sense. Welcome back. James Harden in a 4-team, 7-player, 4 first-round pick with 4 pick swaps trade with the Nets, and Kyrie Irving is not even involved. The Pacers, the Cavaliers get players. It was kind of a big one today for the NBA indeed. We're going to have Howard Beck join us in a little while here, gentlemen, to talk about it. He covers the NBA and now works and writes for Sports Illustrated. So he is coming up in just a little bit. But, you know, I've just been thinking about all the little ripple effects of all this and how a team with three ball-dominant players who, again, you add up their usage rates, we get 90% of a game just in these three guys alone. So how does a team that has not egoless like the Warriors had, but ego-driven basketball players come about sharing one basketball as they're trying to figure it out with what will be an abbreviated bench for sure?
The problem is that you have, of those three guys, one of the three ball-dominant guys does know how to share because he played in an environment where you'd had to share. The other two guys haven't. And I think the problem is probably going to land on Durant as he tries to figure out how to make those other two guys see the game in a way that they've never had to see it before. Or at least in Harden's case, not since he left Oklahoma City. So I view this as Durant's big conundrum because he's done this, but he's working with guys. And we talked about how Draymond Green has had to mentor people. He has to figure out a way to get two other players who are incredibly set in their self-centered ways to not be self-centered, because otherwise this fails. And the fact that Brooklyn has shortened its window by getting rid of all of its draft classes tells you that whatever's going to happen has to happen incredibly quickly. I think I'd be betting against the Nets unless at least one of those two other guys gets it in a hurry.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're looking at Harden here. Harden is the question mark. We know Kevin Durant can share. Like, that's not even a question in my head. We know Kyrie Irving can't. He's said it aloud more than once. He's fighting right now, apparently, in part because he doesn't have enough control because Kevin Durant's the guy in charge. Kyrie's going to Kyrie. And if we didn't know that before the season, we certainly do now. So the question here is, in my mind, whether James Harden can be a different basketball player than he's been the last few years. Now, that seems crazy, but it is worth saying he never really had a team in Houston where there was reason for him to be anything other than what he has been in Houston. And before that, he was a totally different player in Oklahoma City. So as much as it strains the imagination to picture James Harden playing off the ball and not, you know, pounding it into the hardwood until the last second when he either throws it at the rim looking for a foul or kicks it to an open three-point shooter. Like, maybe there are reasons to think maybe he can do something different. And that actually, putting aside all the stuff about Harden that makes me a little sick to my stomach, I'm kind of interested to see that.
A different environment will bring out a different caliber of player in him.
Not caliber, but style.
A different style. Well, to me, that is almost part of the caliber. I mean, it really is, because how would a changed style in Harden lead the league in free throw attempts? And that is such a part of his scoring total on a nightly basis. It really is. And so if he were to change styles, how much does it affect it all? It will be fascinating to watch it all play out in real time. In the pressure that is the NBA, remember, this isn't anything that they can figure out in training camp or over the course of an offseason. This has all been thrown together in a season that is already underway, yet at times is going to be postponed. And that brings us to a little breaking news here, gentlemen. Are we going with the sounder, or are we just going for it? All
right. 95.7 The Game breaking news. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Find out how far an extra mile really goes.
So you all know that COVID tracing is eliminating games, and the Warriors, their scheduled game Friday at Phoenix, has been postponed. There is serious contact tracing going on between the Washington Wizards and the Phoenix Suns, and we have seen big swaths of the schedule for both the Wizards and the Suns get postponed here, and the NBA says that Phoenix will not have the required minimum number of players available on Friday included. So they've already pulled the Warriors game against the Phoenix Suns down. So a three-game road trip at this particular time for the Warriors is a two-game road trip that begins tomorrow in Denver. But there you go. We've already got a Warriors game canceled, not through tracing of their own. I guess the Warriors news today is that Eric Paschal, I guess, practiced and is feeling better and is looking like there is no real reason to be concerned about his contact tracing and that he'll be returning to the team soon.
Well, I hate to do this, but I kind of thought that Phoenix was in for a rough ride because Washington has basically been distributing COVID the same way that the Ottawa Senators were right before the NHL shut down in March. And it's the great flaw of even the NBA's new plan, which is if one team's got it, any team that it touches is getting it too. And in this case, it's the Wizards who can't field enough players to play. They're three games postponed tonight. Zion Williamson just went on the list. So it's, you know, it's the thing that always grows, and it grows exponentially in all directions. So I guess I'm not surprised, but, you know, it's still not a good thing.
Yeah, for what it's worth, this is just contact tracing from the Wizards. Like, the Suns have not had any positive tests that we know about, so we're not sure it's actually being passed by playing against teams. They're just, because of contact tracing, they're not able to do it. So, this is not really that new. It's just the Warriors are now being affected by it.
Howard Beck joining us in just a little bit. We're going to talk about all this with him at the top of the hour. Guys, as we spent an entire football season thinking what, pardon me, what lever or mechanism the NFL could pull to give itself a little leeway, there was the talk of week 18, week 19 possibly being enacted. I thought for sure that the NFL was going to give itself a week's grace period to figure things out. They never exercised that right, that privilege, if that's what you want to call it, that decision to add that extra week, which I thought was something that made sense in real time, just as a safety net for the entire league. What I think the NBA now needs to consider is expanding rosters by 2 to 3 players. Because if we're really going to look at contact tracing being a reason why 12 to 15 man NBA rosters can get reduced to under 8 quickly, and I do. So what is the absolute written rule? You must dress 8, but 7 have to be available, or it's close to that. It's somewhere in there. You have to have 7 players at all times.
8 have to be available.
But 8 have to be available. But you can, like, wink and a smile that he ain't playing either, but we're going to dress him. So you got to have at least 7, technically 8, preferably 9 to 10 at any game. So doesn't the NBA just owe it to itself and coaches the leeway of bringing up more two-way players or G League players or 10-day contracts? Like, I think it makes an awful lot of sense, and it wouldn't hurt anyone. It would just provide more opportunity for players to prove that they might belong in this league. I think it'd be a good idea.
I think it's coming, too, because it's, you know, it's becoming clearer and clearer that those players are now sort of needed to prevent postponements.
Right.
And I'm surprised that it wasn't part of the protocols yesterday, because people have already been talking about it. And I suspect with a couple more postponements, the Board of Governors will be on another Zoom call in a couple of days going, I know you guys don't want to pay guys big salaries even for 10 days, but we have to get games in. And even though that might be asked backwards in a health and safety way, I think that's the next step.
I think it is, too. Welcome, everybody, by the way, to your 4 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1 San Francisco. a radio.com sports station.
We're very happy to welcome in our next guest here in the 4 o'clock hour, Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. He is the co-host of the Crossover Podcast. We like him no matter who he's writing for, and he's back on here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, we're happy to say hello to Howard Beck on a very interesting day for the cities of Houston, Brooklyn, and I guess tangentially we've got Indianapolis and Cleveland involved here, Howard. But the principles and the trade struck today is really something else. What do you think of the trade heard around the world, and what is Brooklyn up to?
Well, Brooklyn's up to trying to win a championship. I think that's pretty clear. This is an all-in kind of move when you're dealing pretty much every first-round pick in your control for the foreseeable future for a 31-year-old former MVP. This is an all-in move. You've got Kevin Durant. You kind of have Kyrie Irving. I'm not sure where Kyrie Irving is, but presumably he is back in the fold sometime soon. You add James Harden to the mix, and okay, you've got the most fearsome scoring trio in the league in a time when there really aren't any other big threes. And we're so this is a new big three. How effective they could be together, whether they'll all be together, I think are open questions. But I don't think the goal is at all ambiguous here. The Nets are we're already all in with Durant and Kyrie Irving, and now they are as pot committed as you can possibly be, and there are certainly some risks involved there, but you know I don't and I have not spoken to anybody there. I don't know what you know. I don't think this deal is official yet, so no one's talking. But you know how they're weighing future risk versus the present, how they think this will all fit together. I am curious to hear those answers.
How many points per game will the Nets have to score if they don't make any more moves this year and are going to go to the end of the season with this lineup?
They were not a very good defensive team before this trade, and this is only going to make them worse because, as we know, Harden isn't much of a defender. His post defense is fine, but I mean, traditionally you think of as a guard, can he stay in front of, and does he have any interest in staying in front of other guards? And Kyrie Irving's a net negative. And Kevin Durant was an elite defender before the Achilles, and I don't think he's quite like his offensive game looks very Durant-like. Whether he can make the same impact defensively and over the course of an entire season is yet to be seen. And the Nets also gave up Jared Allen, who, of course, is a great young rim protector. So they have taken a step backwards defensively and a huge step forward offensively. I think the history of this league suggests that you need to have at minimum a top 10 defense, maybe a little bit less than that. If you're a truly elite offense, you can be maybe a little bit worse, but I think that it's not the biggest question about this team right now. Cause I think the biggest question is the chemistry period. And also where is Kyrie Irving, but somewhere after those questions will be, can they play defense at a competent enough level to make them contenders, to get them past Philadelphia and Milwaukee and Boston and Indiana?
You would think the what is Houston up to question would be easily answered, much like the Nets one with getting rid of James Harden. Is it weird to you that they decided to flip LeVert for Oladipo, given that you'd think they'd want to sort of tear down and get as young as possible?
Yeah, listen, I think LeVert's great. I think he's a really nice young player, and he's got great versatility positionally and skill set-wise. I kind of get it, though. And again, we don't have official explanations or rationale for anything yet, but reading between the lines, I would think that, John Wall, so far so good, but again, another post-Achilles guy. Don't really know what his future is. And Oladipo, frankly, he had a pretty serious leg injury himself a couple of years ago and is still getting it back. But Oladipo, on balance, is a more established and potent scorer than LeVert. LeVert's kind of a jack-of-all-trades. He can score at a high level. He has been scoring at a high level. I don't know that you want him as your go-to scorer. Oladipo has carried a team as a go-to scorer before in Indiana. And so I'm just guessing it right.